This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
77 WABC's continuing coverage of the Paris attacks. Live from Paris, France, Geraldo.
There is, as we have repeated frequently, no city in America that is better prepared to defend and protect against a terrorist attack. We work tirelessly to ensure that. There is nothing new about that video. New York obviously remains one of the top terrorist targets in the world. That video, our review of it, it looks like it has been hastily produced.
The people of New York City will not be intimidated. We understand it is the goal of terrorists to intimidate and disrupt our democratic society. We will not submit to their wishes. We remind all New Yorkers that we can depend on the NYPD, and at the same time, every resident of this city can help the NYPD. We have a phrase, if you see something, say something. That phrase is very meaningful.
Mayor de Blasio, Police Commissioner Bill Bratton, late night news conference, talking about a video. Before I give you the big news from here in Paris, Noam Layden, what is the video that they are talking about?
Well, it's this ISIS video that came out yesterday. And this is the music you're hearing. This is actually the music from the video. I don't know if they paid for the rights for it, but it's very slickly done, quick cuts from one scene to the next. Starts off where we see someone making a suicide belt, and you see the suicide belt being wrapped in electric tape, and it's so slickly done. Then quickly to the next cut, you see Allah hands. You see someone putting their hands up in prayer. Then quick cut to the next scene. It's right outside our doors, Geraldo. Right here on 34th Street, you're seeing the Fridays restaurant. Quick nut to the next scene. You see people crossing West 34th Street, thousands at a time. Quick to the next cut, you see those same hands that were praying to Allah with their finger on their grenade pin about to pull it. Then back to the suicide belt, you see people unbuttoning their shirts to put that suicide belt on along their waist, then pulling up their pants, then putting up a leather jacket, zipping that leather jacket up. You see what looks like they're about to go downstairs or into the crowd that's on West 34th Street. And then one more time, you see those hands up to Allah, and the video's over.
It is not as if we are a stranger completely to suicide attacks, or at least bombs, IEDs being planted. I remember just a couple of years ago that schmuck from Connecticut getting instructions from the ISIS or Al-Qaeda website on how to build a car bomb. He made a bomb. It fizzled out. The hot dog vendor saw him running away. He got nabbed eventually. But you heard our police commissioner. You heard our mayor. New York is as safe as any big city on earth. As safe as any big city on earth. And yet I had calls today, Noam, from my friends in Edgewater telling me that something was going on in the George Washington Bridge. What was that about?
Yeah, so George Washington Bridge, height of the rush hour this morning. All of a sudden, we're watching the traffic cams, as anybody can. You can go online and watch them. And there we see Port Authority police officers pulling over what seems to be almost every single truck that is heading towards the toll plaza on the Fort Lee side. Well, the toll plaza is only on the Fort Lee side. So they're coming through, and it seems like maybe quick conversations, head into the front window, head back out of those police officers' trucks on their way. Made a call over to the Port Authority, said, what's going on? I have not seen this, or not in a long while anyway. And what they told us right away, yes, a reaction to what's taking place where you are, what happened in Paris. And you're going to see what you saw in the days, the months, the weeks, even the years after the 9/11 attacks, those random searches of cars at the different toll crossings across the New York City area are back. They're back, and they were back in place this morning, and they're going to be random, and they're going to show up anytime, anywhere, even at the height of traffic and rush hour on the George Washington Bridge.
That's okay with me. It may be an inconvenience momentarily. It's a pain in the neck anyway, getting across that bridge a lot of times. But checking out those trucks are fine. I wonder if they're racially profiling when they look in the window. I wonder if they are looking for a certain somebody. I don't know. But I tell you this much. Hit the ding-dong music, Crash.
Ding-dong, the witch is dead. Witch on witch, the wicked witch. Ding-dong, the wicked witch is dead. I hold an airy host. Sing it high, sing it low. Ding-dong, the wicked witch is dead.
Live from Paris, the wicked witch is dead. Another way of saying the dog is dead. I'm not talking about the heroic police canine Diesel that lost his life saving many of his fellow officers during the dramatic assault I told you about yesterday morning on the outskirts of Paris yesterday. I'm talking about 27-year-old Abdelhamid Aboud, the Moroccan-born Belgian sadist, murdering dog, sadist, the mastermind of the dreadful Friday the 13th attacks here in Paris, France. He's dead. He's dead. The authorities confirming that he's dead. It is him. It is his body. Torn to pieces by shrapnel. Ripped apart by multiple bullet wounds. They identified him by what was left of his fingers. They got his prints. His diabolical plot to inflict mass casualties on the French people forced the closing of this open society. As you know, partially succeeded. Separate attacks on Friday night, that awful night for so many of us. 129 innocent civilians savagely murdered, most shot at point-blank range. 414 injured, many grievously. Terror sown in the hearts and minds of tens of thousands of families here in France and around the world, including my own. And as bad as it was, ladies and gentlemen, it could have been so much worse. It was only because of tight security at the soccer stadium. Tight security probably there because the president of France was also there watching the game, along with my daughter. Three suicide bombers prevented by that security from getting in among the crowd, adding countless casualties to the dreadful butcher's toll. But Aboud is dead. He's gone. His body torn to pieces. Today, questions are being asked, though, along with celebrating his violent death, congratulating the cops who took down the safe house. The safe house in which perpetrators were plotting further mass murder mayhem, targeting, known, we think, both the huge Charles de Gaulle Airport here and a famous shopping mall here in Paris. French authorities now asking, how the hell this guy? How did this Aboud? We know his face now so well from these videos, these sick videos that show him in Syria driving a pickup truck, and the cargo of the pickup truck is all dead bodies, wrapped corpses that he says in the video were apostate Muslims who don't believe in the crap that ISIS is spreading. But how the hell did this guy, how did he get back into France without anybody being alerted to the fact that this very notorious jihadist who was thought to be in Syria, how was he instead in the heart of Paris, leading a gang of killers inflicting the worst violence to hit the City of Light since the Second World War? It's just amazing. You get so outraged by this. I am so happy, though, that he is dead. I wish Diesel, the dog, was still alive to piss on his grave. The dog is so much better a creature than any of these slugs, these mass murderers. Just opening fire on a crowded theater, those restaurants lining the boulevards of Paris. And they're bragging about it. They're releasing this video showing New York City as the next target, or Washington, D.C. as the next target. And they're releasing the pictures of the death in a soda can. The soda can bomb that ISIS claims they used to take down the Russian airliner. the soda can bomb that anybody with the internet can replicate? Where do you think the Boston Marathon bombers get their plans from? They just went on the internet. Simple. Just look it up. How do I make a bomb? I would hope that every website like that, that are so easily accessible, is being constantly monitored by somebody. Constantly. And I would hope that Anonymous, the hacker group that now is screwing around with ISIS's varied website, I hope that they really screw them up, digitally speaking, even as the authorities screw them up in a more physical way. The bombing continues. The Russian big bombers are out now, cruise missiles, all kinds of other bombs. The United States air traffic controllers keeping the Russian aircraft separated from the French aircraft, separated from the American aircraft. We're working. Who would have thought? Who would have thought with Ukraine and Crimea and everything else that even our effete president could be dragged kicking and screaming into this de facto alliance with Russia to take out these terrorists? But I say, hey, you want to bomb them? Bomb them. Just bomb them. We've got to kill them. Kill them before they kill us. That video was meant to scare you. That video was meant, my wife, no, Erica, said to me, we should think about moving out of the city.
Really?
I mean, that's what it's for.
You know what you can tell her? Tell her this, because I was fortunate enough a couple times to have a fairly long conversation with our former police commissioner, Ray Kelly. And I said to him, I remember, you know, when we see these alerts, when should I be afraid? I mean, should I be afraid? And he goes, that's what I'm here for, and that's what the NYPD's here for. That's what Homeland Security's here. We're the ones who are here to be afraid and to make sure nothing happens. And he said, I will let you know when you should be afraid. And he never did in all the time that he was police commissioner. So I believe him, because he kept us safe all those years. And I believe Police Commissioner Bill Bratton, too, that we have the best people out there, and they're going to do everything in their power to make sure something doesn't happen here. So tell her that.
But between the fear that they hope to instill with these videos, they are also ginning up this fake refugee crisis. They are doing that. Mark my words, they are doing that to separate, to divide the American people. They want to create societal disruption in the United States. They want to turn people against each other. They want to generate that fear so we have an outsized reaction that they can then promote and talk about to the rest of the world. But they have been bloodied themselves now. We have, the French rather, but they are our allies, our oldest allies, have taken out the leader of the Friday the 13th attacks. And I was with my daughter, I was with Simone, when we heard the news. We high-fived. He's dead. We're not. Screw you, you piece of crap. John Kerry, the Secretary of State, is not helping his boss at all. John Kerry making some ridiculous comments about, first, the Charlie Hebdo massacre last January, saying it was sort of had a reason behind it, sort of he implied that it was kind of justified in the minds of the people who slaughtered the 17 people in the satirical magazine and at the Jewish kosher restaurant. Chris Christie and John McCain went all out after John Kerry. Listen.
He needs to get some sleep and shut up is what he needs. That's disgraceful. For the Secretary of State of the United States to stand up and say that there's some rationale for what happened in January, these are the kind of weak, mixed signals that this administration sends that helps to really, you know, make the American people think that there's no one watching the store. And there isn't.
I agree with Chris Christie. John Kerry has probably been the most inept Secretary of State that certainly in my lifetime.
So he's the most inept Secretary of State in his life. I think that's the same line that Donald Trump uses about Hillary Clinton. Maybe they both are. John Kerry tightening up, making a much more forceful statement in fairness to the Secretary of State. Here's how he amended the tenor of his remarks.
There are no grounds of history religion, ideology, psychology, politics, economic disadvantage, or personal ambition that justify the slaughter of unarmed civilians, the bombing of public places, or indiscriminate violence towards innocent men, women, and children. And such atrocities can never be rationalized, and we can never allow them to be rationalized. There's no excuse. They have to be stopped.
Thank you for that, Mr. Kerry, Secretary Kerry. Why the hell didn't you say that in the first place? All you do is end up hurting a lot of people's feelings and casting the Obama administration in this cloak that I think is devastating for Hillary Clinton's presidential aspirations, because she's tied herself so closely to the current administration. But they have been so weak. I remember, let me tell you a story now. I was at the opening of the Clinton Library in 2004, November 2004. The election was the day before, or I think it was actually on a Thursday, maybe 2 days before. So we're there at the opening of the Clinton Library, and guess who shows up? None other than Senator John Kerry, who just lost the race to George W. Bush in 2004. And Kerry said to me, and it was big news at the time, he confided in me. I mean, I was very welcome in that crowd, the Clinton crowd, because I had been such a ferocious defender of Bill Clinton in the impeachment struggle over the Monica Lewinsky stuff. He said to me, that security alert that came down over the weekend, there was something, an alert that the terror group was making a threat, something they were going to escalate. Remember, we were totally engaged in both Iraq at that time and in Afghanistan. And he said, that's what sunk me. I had it right until Saturday or Sunday, but that's what sunk me, that security stuff. That was nothing compared to this, what happened here in France. Nothing. It was minor compared to this and President Obama's handling of it so far in terms of his language and now his Secretary of State's language. They are just lucky that it is not a year from now and people aren't about to vote for president. 11 months from now, people weren't about to vote for president, because there's no way on God's green earth a Democrat would get elected with the kind of wishy-washy, squishy approach that they have indicated and shown so far. But it's really appalling how rationale. Yeah, you could say that everybody's got a rationale. Satanists have a rationale. They believe in the devil. The Nazis had a rationale. They believed in racial supremacy. You know, everybody's got a rationale. The cowboys had a rationale when they were killing the Indians. They needed the territory. They needed the ground. America had to expand. These poor Aboriginal people were just everyone has a rationale. These Sunni Muslim extremists have a rationale. God told them to do it. At least that's what they advertise. Let me squeeze in one more call. And then, Gene, thanks for calling 866 Geraldo in Brooklyn. How are you?
Good, Geraldo. I'm glad you're safe and your family is safe.
Thank you. Thank you.
I have two quick things I want to ask you. I want to hear your response.
Sure.
I would like to know why reporters aren't questioning Muslim refugees to hear the gripe about the West. Are they upset with Westerners interfering in their country's politics? And 95% of the Syrian refugees, young men, why not use them instead of using our troop to combat ISIS?
I think that's a good idea.
And lastly,
I think that's a great idea.
Lastly, de Blasio held up a picture of that poor 3-year-old dead baby that washed ashore trying to come to a safer country. What I would like to know from de Blasio, yes, we are a compassionate country, but I would hold up my pictures of 9/11 and people that were killed throughout the war because of the hate. So I want to hear what you have to say.
Well, let me take the middle one first. Well, all right, I'll take the 9/11. First of all, with the young men idea is a good idea. I don't think it's a far-fetched idea. I think it was Chris Christie's idea originally. And I was talking with Greg Hart, who's here with me. I was talking about the days of the French Foreign Legion.
Right,
when
right.
They used to have a mechanized brigade of foreigners who agreed to fight for the Republic of France and what it stood for, even though they were not French-born. I think that these Syrians could easily be rounded up, recruited, and do something right for their country, help liberate it.
Obama has no strategy to defeat ISIS, and now he's preparing to let hundreds of thousands of refugees from Syria into the United States. I will stop illegal immigration. We'll build a wall on the southern border, and yes, I will also quickly and decisively bomb the hell out of ISIS. We'll rebuild our military and make it so strong, no one, and I mean no one, will mess with us.
You know, that's Donald Trump, and that kind of language ordinarily might be alarming. Might sound alarmist, but right now I think it exactly fits the mood of many, many Americans. There's not only anxiety, there's this low level of fear, the wonder, can soft targets be saved? Can civilization itself, the fabric of civilization, we need to trust each other to live shoulder to shoulder in a place like New York, a place like Paris. You have to have a reasonable expectation when you go to the concert that no one's going to try to kill you, that when you sit in the restaurant, the street side restaurant there, having a cup of coffee or a glass of wine, that no one's going to try to blow you up, that when you go to a soccer stadium, that there's not going to be suicide bombers. But can society, can a free and open society ever protect itself? Van Hipp might know. Van Hipp Jr. is the chairman of the American Defense International. That's a D.C.-based consulting firm specializing in government affairs and business development. Van's written a book called The New Terrorism, How to Fight It and How to Defeat It. We welcome him to the program. So, Van, how do you fight it? How do you fight it, keep your society open? What do you do?
Well, you got to think outside the box, Geraldo. I think the 9/11 Commission said it best of all, that 9/11, above all else, was a failure of imagination. World was responding to that last attack rather than thinking outside the box to prevent the next. And let me tell you, we've seen with radical Islam, the term I use is dispersion. It's changing. There's a much more sophisticated and savvy enemy than we saw with Al-Qaeda. You've got now Boko Haram, you've got ISIS, you've got recruitment campaigns on social media. But we've got to think outside the box rather than we're responding to that last attack. It's no one magic bullet. It's a combination of things. A lot of it's common sense. But one thing, Geraldo, this is not a Democrat, Republican, conservative, or liberal issue. It's about keeping America safe. And that's why in my book, I say that conservatives need to work with, and I'm going to start to date myself, the old Henry Scoop Jackson Democrats, or the 9/11 liberals, people who I may disagree with on economics, but they love their country, and at the end of the day, they want to keep America safe. We've got to work together. Because the foremost reason we have a federal government is to provide for the common defense of the American people.
You know, I totally agree with you, and that's I try to preach that, but I kind of, sometimes I feel that I'm preaching to deaf ears, because it seems that this too, like so many other issues in our society, has divided Americans along ideological lines. But let me be very specific, Van. How do you protect yourself from someone who not only is willing to die, but almost invites death? How do you protect innocent people, moviegoers, concert goers, soccer game goers, restaurant goers? How do you protect them against one of these nut jobs?
Yeah,
it doesn't take a lot to cause a lot of injuries.
Yeah, and the problem today is that technology, I say, Geraldo, it's a more dangerous world today than it was after 9/11, because technology is changing so rapidly. And our government, here's the problem, our government is so stovepipe and lacks the ability to analyze and respond quick enough. So it's as the technology increases, the threats are increasing exponentially. But one recommendation I've made, and I think it's a good one, and I will tell you, the emergency management directors at the state level, I think most of them would agree with me, we need a situational awareness hotline in America, completely separate from 911. So if I'm at Times Square in New York and I see suspicious activity, I could instantly text a photo of suspicious activity, whatever, to a database that could connect the dots, and we could analyze that and respond much more quickly. We don't have that. We've got the technology to do that. That's the kind of thing that we could do right now that would address the soft target scenario.
Okay, Van Hipp, the author of a new book, The New Terrorism, How to Fight It and How to Defeat It. Before I go to my calls at 866-Geraldo, let me ask you this, Van. Where do you stand on the whole issue of Syrian refugees? Is this issue being hyped, or are these immigrants the Trojan horse that Donald Trump warns against?
Well, the FBI Director Robert Mueller testified, Geraldo, 3 or 4 years ago to the Homeland Security Committee, and it concerned me. He said that in 2011, 59,000 people from countries other than Mexico including Yemen, Somalia, Syria, Pakistan, you name it, were caught illegally trying to come into this country. Well, we're the ones that we didn't catch, and where are they today? I think we've got to be very, very careful with the vetting process. And my concern on the Syrian refugees, I heard Nicholas Rasmussen, who runs our Counterterrorism Coordination Center, testify and talk to Congress in February that this was a population that concerned him, and he couldn't be sure that we could properly vet him. He said that back in February to the U.S. Congress.
All right, Van Hipp, the new terrorism. I appreciate you coming on, mate. Thank you very much. I have always said, Noam, and I say it again, and I'll take your calls momentarily, folks, that there has never been, as far as we know, up until now, and as Noam has said and reported accurately, we have been since 9/11 safe. Our nation has been safe, has not suffered a terrorist attack. There has never been a successful penetration of the southern border, terrorist penetration of the southern border. There have been about a half a dozen from the northern border, but none ever from the southern border. Now comes the news that a sixth Syrian, this is the sixth one, they have captured in the Central American nation of Honduras, bearing a fake passport, a fake Greek passport, either stolen or sold by the original owner, the actual owner. Six Syrian young men trying to get into the United States. They came from Turkey to Mexico to El Salvador. They arrived in Honduras, where they were captured with pretty slickly, if you look it up on the internet, pretty slickly adjusted or the passports that they jury-rigged, that they forged. They didn't forge. These are actual passports. They put their own pictures on them in a way that seems very authentic. Six of them. So you have six Syrian men captured in Honduras. The good news is that Interpol, the international police organization, kind of the world's FBI, they were on them a couple of stops before they even got to Honduras. The other good news is that the Honduran authorities, once they were tipped to the fact that these guys were coming in, they were crawling all over them. You know, generally speaking, we talk about Central America, we talk about the chaos and the anarchy and the drug dealing and so forth. But the Honduran government was all over with the tips from Interpol. The six men with the fake passports are now in hard custody in Honduras, a place you don't want to be in jail. And, you know, I don't know what's going on with them, but I'm sure they're being questioned. They're going to start tracing that back. But I have to admit that this is a shocking development that is very disquieting to see six of them attempting to get in through Central America.
Are they terrorists? Do we know that they're terrorists? Or are they just Syrians trying to get here?
Who knows what they are? They are of fighting age, though. They're men of fighting age. And to me, they're not the kind of people that I would include in my compassion for the refugees.
What, but they're
no shoe rule.
Are they people who just didn't want to wait in line? I mean, do we know? No, really. I mean, is that what it is? They just wanted to get here? We don't know.
It's like they don't even get the chance to tell us that story.
Right.
Because when you have a stolen passport, and you're from Syria, and you got the passports in Greece. That means you made it from Syria through Turkey into Greece. You got your hands on stolen passports, Greek passports in Greece. And then you go to Turkey, Brazil, Argentina, Costa Rica, El Salvador, Honduras. You know, that's too fishy for words. It's really too fishy for words. Were they coming just for jobs? Was it? Then why didn't they stop at some of the other places? Why don't they just try to get a job in Brazil or Argentina?
Well, those
or
are
Costa Rica.
All, that's an excellent question. I was just asking if we knew that, if we knew that they were definitely ISIS members or something like that.
They don't have any confessions yet, as far as I know. But that will be a very interesting interrogation by the Hondurans and the Interpol guys, just as the eight surviving terrorists here in Paris. They cannot be too comfortable right now. Can you imagine that interrogation? The French are they're like the Hondurans in that sense. They are bare knuckle, no nonsense. There's going to be a lot of water poured
in those cells before this is all done. I'll take your calls for a couple of minutes, and I have a lot more information to convey to you this morning. Here in Queens, Renee is on the line. What's up, Renee? Thanks for calling. Is that a French name?
Good morning. How are you doing? I just wanted to say something in terms of, in reference to what de Blasio, that picture that de Blasio was showing, trying to show Governor Christie. I think Governor Christie should show de Blasio the pictures of the carnage from Paris, and that'll definitely wake him up. That's all.
Well, you're referencing, you make a good point, obviously, Renee. Mayor de Blasio said this is the person we're talking about when we're talking about extending a helping hand to the Syrian refugees, and he points to the famous shot, the awful shot, the shot that made history of the three-year-old child drowned on the beach, on the Greek beach, after the attempted passage from Turkey. And what Renee is suggesting is that you've seen them on the covers of the Daily News and the Post and elsewhere. The Saturday, last Saturday, the 14th, if you know, those pictures are very, very graphic. Not in American newspapers, they fuzz them up. Here in Europe, they tend to just let it all hang out, just horrifying. I mean, the extent. And you know something, Noam, you should have seen the news reports. They were all breaking, you know, over the weekend of the emergency rooms. Every hospital in Paris was filled to capacity. They called in all doctors from their vacations. They called in all hands on deck. They were working to, you know, all triage to save lives. I mean, can you imagine 129? Those were the killed in action, so to speak. But they had 414 who were injured, and many, many, many of them were grievously injured. That means limbs that had to be amputated. That means other organs failing. Blood everywhere. And, you know, one of the weird things is in Israel, if you're in Israel, as you know, when there's a terrorist attack, they have that place cleaned up in an hour. It looks like nothing ever happened. They come, they have the Chabad ambulances. They come, they steam clean it. They get the chairs back in order in the restaurants. An hour later, you don't know anything happened. That's the only way they could preserve a semblance of normal life in the terrorist reality. Here, though, they just, there was blood in the sand as late as yesterday. It was just yesterday they started cleaning it up. And yesterday, of course, was the amazing raid, the raid that took down the terrorists who perpetrated this horrible crime, the worst violence in France since World War II. In Westchester, Pete's on the line. Hey, Pete, what are you thinking about today?
Yeah, hi. I want to comment on two things. One is protecting soft targets, and the other is Mayor de Blasio giving New Yorkers a false sense of security. Okay. I guess I'll start with the soft targets. To mitigate these incidents, a practical but not desirable tactic would really be to have people there, police, security, that are armed. I know Americans don't like the idea of having armed police and security in schools or movie theaters or malls. But to be quite honest, to be practical, by the time the police respond to these incidents through 911 or, as your previous guest said, an emergency management call line, it's too late. There's too many casualties. So it's not desirable, but I think the future of America is when you're going to see more armed security, you're going to see more police. And I would even urge patriotic retired police and active police that are off duty to carry their weapons, to be prepared to defend people themselves and people around them when these crazies come into these places and start shooting.
I think that all of your advice is absolutely well taken. I agree with everything you've said. Go ahead, Pete.
Now Mayor de Blasio and the commissioner got out there in Times Square, which I appreciated, bold and courageous leadership to stand out there. And they urged New Yorkers not to be afraid, and I don't think people should be afraid. But do not think that the NYPD can stop these terrorist attacks. They can certainly respond to them. They can thwart a lot of them. But don't forget that the Times Square bomber, the car bomb, was not stopped by the NYPD. It was a hot dog vendor walking past that noticed. And luckily for the people in Times Square, this individual did not know how to properly build a car bomb, or you would have had hundreds of dead. And don't
you got it, Pete. I got to let you go. We'll be right back after the news. Don't go away.
I'm your master's over. We'll be right back. death place to that hell of the gun. You that hide behind walls, you that hide behind desks. I just want you to know I can't see through your masks.
Pearl Jam's version of Dylan's classic, Masters of War.
But to build and destroy, you play with.
Did you see the video of the one store, people running in, then the windows blow out as the machine gun fire tear out the big plate glass windows? Then you actually see as the people come running into the restaurant, hiding behind the counter, some going down the stairs, you actually see the gunman. He comes right into the frame. You see him clear as can be. And he points his rifle down. He's just outside. He doesn't come inside. He's just outside. He points his rifle down because there's a woman crouching right at his feet, cowering at his feet. And he fires at her. But the gun apparently misfires. And he turns and he goes stomping off looking for other victims or to reload, and she runs off. I mean, of all the close calls, that one, Gnome, was the closest of all.
Yeah, that video will stick with me forever as the same one of that pregnant woman outside the nightclub holding on for dear life as everybody was exiting out of there, holding on to that railing two stories up, begging for somebody to help her. That one still sort of haunts me from last week.
It haunts. She's doing okay from what I hear.
Well, that's good.
The state of emergency continues here in Paris and in the entire Republic of France. The state of emergency gives the government, which is much more, the executive branch here is much more limited than our president. The president of France has the more limited powers. But this state of emergency, which was voted favorably by the overwhelming majority of the National Assembly, that's their Congress, gives President Hollande enormous power. For instance, the need to get a warrant is suspended. They can make warrantless arrests. And we had the caller, Pete, I think it was, just before we went to the news break, who suggested that off-duty officers be hired at every important institution we have, restaurants, concert venues, certainly schools. Here in France, cops off duty are not allowed to carry their weapons, except now with the state of emergency, off duty officers are required to have their weapons with them. So France is taking this war very, very seriously. But the best news out of Paris today, it is him. It is the dog. I'm not talking about the heroic police dog, Diesel. Poor Diesel, the only good guy lost in yesterday's assault. But the dog, the dirty dog, the low-down 27-year-old Abdelhamid Aboud, the Moroccan-born Belgian sadist, the mastermind of the dreadful Friday the 13th attacks here in Paris, France, he's dead. And his female cousin, whose bomb killed them both, there's some last words on a tape we just heard. I didn't download it. It's on the TV in France, where you hear a cop say, as he's shooting, he stops. He says, "Where's your boyfriend?" to the woman. And she says, "He's not my boyfriend." And the next thing you hear is the ba-boom. And the explosion was so vicious, so powerful, that her spine was thrown and ended up on one of the police cars. She's the cousin, they think the cousin of Abdelhamid Aboud. Moroccan-born. Remember, all these European countries, particularly France and Morocco and Algeria, they have a colonial history. They occupied those countries for decades, for generations. And then when they withdrew and gave the colonies their independence, they allowed many of the people who had been under French rule for decades and decades, generations, they allowed them access to France. France's Muslim population is 7.5%. Ours is barely 1%. And there are whole neighborhoods in Paris. You remember Fox News got in a jam saying there were no-go zones, that there were zones where Muslims were so extreme, so militant, they wouldn't let outsiders in. That's not true. It's not true that there are no-go zones, but there are definitely areas in this city that are very, very shady neighborhoods. Think Fort Apache, the Bronx, the 1970s, you get my drift. And they're largely Muslim. Many of those aren't long-timers. The long-time Muslim populations have been absorbed pretty successfully. Most of the troublemakers, or most of the most restive of the Muslim population here, are newcomers from North Africa. They are on the short end of the stick, economically speaking. They're very isolated in their communities. There's language barriers. There's all kinds of stuff that separate them from the rest of France. And there is definitely, since the time of 9/11, an added friction between the communities. And it's very, very difficult for any society to deal with. You know, I heard a question asked, and ladies and gentlemen, I'll get to your calls momentarily, 866-ORELLA. I heard a question asked of a very smart lady on Fox News this morning. And the reporter asked in a fairly assertive way, name one country on earth where Muslim immigrants have been successfully integrated into society. And the answer, Noam, was?
I don't know. Is it America?
United States.
It is. Okay.
United States. Because think about it. I mean, there are whole communities in the Detroit area. I think Dearborn. Dearborn, yeah, right. And many others that, where the Muslim population, they are the shop owners, they are the businessmen, they are the VIPs, the high rollers, firemen.
Patterson, New Jersey, closer by.
Closer by, Patterson, absolutely. Okay, now we'll start with you all. James in New Jersey, what's on your mind? James, thanks very much for calling.
First of all, Gerardo, it's a pleasure to speak to you, and I enjoy the show. It's very informative. The thing that I'm witnessing as a black American born and raised in New York City, and I'm listening to this, the terrorism has sunk its teeth so far in America that it's divided us where we can't even agree to get together to try to make a decision on a solution that everybody has their opinions on each side about what we should do about the issue. We're just continuously tearing ourselves apart. I'm disappointed in America right now, from the mayor house in each city to the top of the White House. Everybody's mudslinging. I've never seen anything like this in my life. It's like,
so let me ask you, who you blame? Who do you fault for that, James? In your mind, well, who do you think is responsible?
I think both sides, Geraldo, because, you know, we may not agree on everything, but nobody's coming together, and both sides are to blame, Republicans and the Democrats, both sides. And until we come together, terrorism is working its plan into America. This is what they want to do. This is what they devised to happen. This is not by accident that we are mudslinging and that one party don't want the folks from Syria to come here. Some do. So, all right. But what is the solution? This is what we are supposed to be, the dominant nation in the world. We can't come together to make a decision. We're in a stalemate right now. We can't even get together to make a solution or a suggestion again. We're so far divided, and they're working their plan. That's all I basically wanted to say. I hope everybody out there that's on both sides hear this. Come together. Figure this out. This should be resolved. This is a serious issue, and until we keep fighting and bickering amongst ourselves, it's going to get worse, and we're going to get divided further. Their terrorism plan is working.
All right, got it, man, and well said. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much, James. Well said. Don't be a stranger. Come on back. Thank you. And Dan in Staten Island, what's on your mind, Dan? Hello? Is my button working here?
Basically, I'd like to comment on how France and Russia have really stepped up the game, and the United States is still so lackadaisical.
I'm with you, man. I'm with you. What the hell? I mean, what do you need before you get the, all right, so you made a mistake. Maybe you underestimated ISIS. It's okay. A lot of people underestimated ISIS before.
But let me also say, this country has become too politically correct. And I have to be honest with you, and people are not going to like what I have to say, but at this point, I feel we have to be very leery of any of these Muslims coming from the Middle East. And the reason I say that is most of the terrorist groups are of the Muslim religion, and the good Muslims, they're not doing enough to stepping up and correcting their own people or fighting against the people that are bringing them down. And I'm afraid that another enemy that we have, and excuse me for saying it, but Obama's in the White House, and his middle name of Hussein, to me, means something. And if you think about it, he is destroying the country from within. The economy is worse than ever. He's weakened our military, wants to close down Guantanamo Bay. The relationship with Israel, worse than it's ever been. I feel very leery that our president is siding more with that other side, our enemy, than, and it's a shame to say, but I'm sorry, it's my feelings.
I got it, and I want you to, that's what this show's here for. We want to hear from you. You know, very, very harsh assessment of Barack Obama, Barack Hussein Obama. I was waiting for that to come up. I think, though, to think that the president of the United States does not want the best of this country is really misguided. He does. I'm sure he does. I swear to you he does. I definitely disagree with the wimpiness of his response to this current crisis, though. And there is no doubt that the French and the Russians are doing a much better job of it. But let me just give you this one thing to think about. I remember I covered Libya and the fighting in Libya between the militias and the Muammar Gaddafi people. It was the French that dragged the United States into the Libyan fight. It was the French planes, the same ones that are bombing ISIS now, with the same aircraft carrier, the Charles de Gaulle. Those same planes from that same aircraft carrier are what destroyed Gaddafi's military and dragged the United States in. Barack Obama saw Sarkozy then. There was the other party in power in France. They went after the Gaddafi people. The United States was dragged in. Gaddafi got eliminated. He got overthrown. His sons are in jail. And what do we have now in Libya? We have a terrorist hotbed. So I don't willy-nilly say, come on, let's go to war, everybody. Let's do this. Like I said, I'm not a warmonger. But having assessed the facts and circumstances in this case, this is not like the Gaddafi militia stuff. ISIS is a country that is now run by terrorists. It is an organized, terroristic government that owns infrastructure, schools, banks, oil facilities. It has to be all-out war against ISIS, the nation. Just now, we're destroying their oil facilities. Just now, why? Why did it take 2 years? 2 years of fighting ISIS and heads being cut off and so forth before we thought that it was appropriate to take out the source of their millions that they are using to sow violence and discord.
Bobby Jindal, nice guy. He was vicious to me. I never even met him. I was watching him last night. He said, I've decided to get out of the race.
Oh, that was good.
So one by one, step by step, we're getting there. I talked about Ben the other day, and I talked about his book. Somebody said, no, you're too tough. So I'll do it very quickly. He wrote a book. He said he's got pathological disease. Okay. That's a problem to me. He said he hit or tried to hit his mother over the head with a hammer. I didn't. Me? Mary McLeod? No way. He said he tried to stab somebody, hit the belt buckle. He said he hit somebody, really a very good friend of his, in the face really, really hard with a padlock. Boom, in his face, did a lot of damage. And that's why they want to elect him. And he's trying to prove that he did it. And I'm saying, I think if I was him, I'd try and prove that I didn't do it. I don't get the whole deal. What is the country coming to?
That's, you know who, Crash just suggested that we should send Dr. Ben Carson to fight ISIS.
He could bore them to death. He could
do... No, I mean, he'd, you know, hit him over the head with a padlock.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Stab him in the belt buckle. That's what Trump meant. Before we go any further, I got to give a shout out to my absolute favorite listener in all the New York area. It's her 75th birthday. She's a wonderful wife, a wonderful mother, a wonderful grandmother, a school teacher in New York City's public schools. She's the mom of one of the best and brightest young attorneys in the metro area, the president of the Brooklyn Bar Association, Arthur Idala. It is the birthday of Marianne Idala, and I send you the biggest kiss from your, you're not my mom. I got a mom, but you're as close to my mom as any non-mom to me could be. I know you're wonderful. I know you're listening. You grew up in Brooklyn, Bay Ridge, proud Sicilian American. And I just I care a lot for you. Your husband, Lou, is a great guy, great lawyer also. So I send you a big kiss on your 75th birthday. So, no, why don't you give her a little, give her a little love.
A little love? How about just a big, love. big wet kiss?
Yeah. Go, give me a little da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Yeah, that. All right, Jim in New Jersey, what's on your mind, buddy? Give me the heart of what you want to talk about.
Yes, okay. Well, what I wanted to say, Geraldo, is that, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again. I'm sure that you know that. You're a smart guy, Geraldo, but unfortunately, I'm afraid that you're teetering on insanity.
Okay, tell me how or why.
You keep calling out for this president to do something different. He's not going to do anything different. Every step he's made has been toward the only lie. The only thing that he didn't lie about was that he was going to fundamentally change America, but he's not changing it for the good. Every step that he's made that we consider a disaster and something to hurt America, in his mind has been a success and exactly on the path that he wants to take. So this is the thing, Geraldo. You're definitely going to have a knee-jerk reaction to this, but step back for a minute and really think about it.
Give me it. I'm waiting.
All right. What needs to be done is everybody, including you behind the microphone, has to call out for this president to resign in 30 days. And if he doesn't resign, Congress needs to invoke the 25th Amendment of the Congress, of the Constitution, and remove him because he is a danger to this society.
Jim, how do you really feel? No, I'm just kidding. No, I don't agree with that. There's a constitutional process. And it's called an election. And it's happening right now. November 2016, cast your ballot for the other side if you don't like the way this side has run things. Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump. You heard it here first.
Last night, Bobby Jindal announced that he is dropping out of the race for president. I guess that after talking it over with family and friends, he realized that even they didn't know he was running for president. Trump is telling he was out on the campaign trail this week. He ran into a little trouble before a speech in Knoxville. I guess someone noticed that the sign in front of Trump's podium actually misspelled the word Tennessee. That's right, only had one S, or as Trump calls it, a naked dollar sign. And that's what he calls S. I also thought that Hillary Clinton recently decided to make her MySpace page private. People can no longer see some of her old campaign ads. When somebody told her that she can just delete it, Hillary said, I'm not falling for that again. I mean, I don't know that one. Nice try.
All right, Jimmy Fallon, not so funny.
No.
I mean, sort of semi, I don't know.
Lame.
A naked dollar sign. I don't know.
Yeah. All those writers, and that was the best they could come up with.
Yeah, the best they could come up with. All right, thanks for your patience in Bucks County. Craig is on the line. What's up, Craig? What are you thinking about?
Yo, Geraldo. How you doing, man?
Good, thanks.
Listen.
I'm especially good today. They killed that son of a bitch, but go ahead.
Listen, this country did not have an appetite for war until we were attacked on 9/11. Even if you go back to the attack on the Marines in Beirut, if you go back to the U.S. Cole being attacked, the embassy in Kenya, we still didn't have a stomach for war until we were attacked on our soil. We still didn't have one until Paris was attacked. It's becoming more and more boots on the ground. People know boots on the ground.
We're very reactive. That's true, Craig. But what's
true.
The
yeah,
bottom line? Shouldn't we be or should we not be? What are you thinking?
Well, what I want you to understand is the president's posture on boots on the ground, on his method of dealing with ISIS, I don't think he misjudged the temperament of the country at all, because we just came out of a war in Iraq that got us ISIS. It was a mistake. So for the president not to rush off and want to put us back in another war, you know, like I said, up until Paris happened, nobody was ready to go rushing into anywhere with boots on the ground.
No, you're right. I think that you're absolutely right. I totally agree with you. But Paris has happened.
It has happened. Okay, so now what do we do?
Right.
What do we do now?
Right.
Do we go to war? What?
I think we have to.
Okay,
you can't leave a terror. This terrorist country has now shown that they are going to project their power. They are going to do the best they can to disrupt society by attacking, not by taking on the armies of the West, but rather taking on the populations of the West, taking on the civilians, the men, the women, and children in the cafes and in the concerts and in the soccer stadiums.
Geraldo, I've always felt unsafe in large, public gatherings such as movie theaters and malls and stuff like that. But the honest fact is, I felt more unsafe by a mentally ill person with a legal gun walking in and shooting up the place than I did about terrorism.
Well, you know, I don't even disagree with that. But now it's here. But now it's here. I mean, far more people. I mean, when you can't even compare the gun violence and the body count from gun violence in the United States to the body count from terrorism.
About in the last year and a half, maybe 12, 15 gun violence attacks. You add up all the victims. I mean,
What about everyday homicides? You're right. You're right.
Well, I'm just saying. So everyone's knee-jerking, and I understand. I get it. Don't get me wrong. It's a bad thing. But what I'm saying to you is,
Craig, you're making perfect sense. Listen, I'm not putting you down. I think you're making perfect sense, and you are accurately reporting our reaction.
I
appreciate you.
Let me say one more thing. Okay,
hurry.
To the gentleman that says Obama's middle name means something, and he's downgrading the economy, I really don't know what economy he's looking at.
Me either.
All of the people,
good
all
point.
The people out there that want to say Obama's bad for the economy. I don't know where they're living, because I live in America and things are not great, but they sure as hell ain't bad.
I'm with you. I'm in Europe right now. When I came to Europe a year ago, the euro, the currency of Europe, was like $1.40. Now it's $1.07. Everybody wants the dollar. Carrie, I am so sorry that you've been holding on. Thank you for your patience in New Jersey. Tell me what's on your mind.
Well, my feeling, Geraldo, is that I think Muslim cultures are so different from ours, and I think a big mistake that President Obama makes is he acts like they're going to react the way that our culture would react. And if you think back to one of the first speeches he made where he said, "We will extend our hand if you will unclench our fist," it's almost like he thinks if we're really nice to them, that they're going to be really nice to us. And I don't think it works that way. I think that the Arab Spring was a disaster because we kept expecting
it
to be
horrible.
Like our American Revolution, and it just wasn't. And with regard to the refugees coming in, you cannot assume that they're not going to use women, and you cannot assume that they're not going to use children. We saw them behead Christian children. That the women child nut doesn't mean anything to them.
What are you laughing at? No, why are you laughing?
Marty's just whispering in my ear. But, can I make a point? I know we're talking about the fact that Syrian immigrants.
You weren't laughing at Kerry.
No, of course not. No, I would never.
Well, I sounded like you were.
I was not, absolutely not. If I could tell you, but I can't tell you.
Kerry, don't go away. Stay there.
I know there's this drastic fear of these Syrian immigrants coming in, but the vetting process is much more than anybody might believe. And in fact, yesterday, and we're going to listen to this interview tomorrow, I had the chance to talk to somebody who's intimately involved in the vetting process of people coming here from overseas who are political refugees coming to our shores. And the process they go through is years. The people who are coming over from Syria didn't check in yesterday and say, hey, I want to come tomorrow. They've been waiting in refugee camps in places like Turkey and Jordan for years to get here. And our fear that they are members of ISIS is totally irrational. It's almost impossible, and I would say it probably is impossible, that they are members of ISIS. And we'll hear from this authority tomorrow right here on Geraldo.
And who are we going to confirm that with? Bashar al-Assad? Like, I just, you know, we had the head of the FBI, James Clapper, all kinds of people saying, no, we can't vet them. We can't totally screen this out. And if nothing else, ISIS and other terrorist groups like that, they adapt. They adapt, and if they will adapt to get around whatever kind of screening we set up. We wouldn't have, you know, I mean, I'm sorry, I think that's a very naive attitude.
No, Carrie, let me tell you something, Carrie.
You're a very nice guy, but you're very naive.
I'm not naive.
He's not that nice.
I'm not that nice of a guy either. So, but Carrie, let me tell you something. I think the previous caller had it right. I think you're in much more danger of being shot in the workplace than you are in being killed in a terrorist attack here on our shores. And we've proved it. No, and we've proved it for the last 14 years. Thousands of people.
It's a new world, though.
It is, but thousands.
It's
every single week, Geraldo, people are killed in a workplace shooting.
I mean, I'm in Paris.
Every single week.
This is Paris.
Every single week.
I send my daughter to school in Paris.
Yeah, and you know what?
I mean, the dream that I came from modest means, I had the ability to send my daughter to Paris.
No doubt.
She comes to Paris and 129 people get killed, 414 get injured. The country gets put on its ear.
Absolutely frightening and sickening and all those things, but let's bring it back here because that's what we're talking about. In America today, 2015, November 18th, you are a billion times more likely to be shot and killed by a fellow American, some psycho who comes into a workplace. It happens every single week in North America. There is a workplace shooting. That's what you should be fearful of. And you know what? The authorities are watching those people overseas who are trying to get here. And they've done a fantastic job, and they'll continue to do a fantastic job.
Will somebody get one offer?
Maybe, Carrie, you get last word.
If that's true, Noam, then why did the head of the FBI and James Clapper and all these people just within the last 6 months say, we don't have any way to really vet these people? This administration, their officials are saying it.
I haven't heard that. The people who are coming here, the refugees that are sitting in these refugee camps today, are the most desperate of the people who need to get here. Why? Because not only have they been kicked out, thrown out, beaten up, and have everything taken away from them in their home country, but then when they get to these refugee camps, they're being treated in the same fashion. So it's the most desperate of people who need to get to our shores today. And so they've waited. The people who are going to be coming, the 10,000 who are going to come here this year, have waited for years to get here. They are not people who have been, who, you know, 7 weeks
okay,
ago
okay,
said,
okay,
I want
okay,
to get
okay,
on a plane.
We got,
to get
all right,
here.
Carrie, I'm going to give you the last word.
You know what? If 95% of them are exactly as you described, I feel for those people. But if there's 5% or 2% that are not, then I feel
gotta
for
go.
America.
Thank you, Carrie, for your patience. I just want to give a shout out to the excellent and very, very upwardly mobile Bronx Borough President Ruben Diaz Jr. He is hosting today his annual Puerto Rican Heritage Month celebration, which, as you know, recognizes the culture, the wonderful land that we share in common. It is a great honor that I was to be the honoree today of President Diaz. And as we honor the people of Puerto Rico, the contributions of so many of the Puerto Rican family. And I just want to say that I'm sorry I can't be there in person. That if I could, you know, I would be. I was scheduled to be there. I was looking to go to Salsa con Fuego up in the Bronx on Cedar Avenue. But I am in Paris instead reporting on the ISIS terrorist attacks and taking care of my daughter.
Ruben Diaz,
my beautiful daughter.
That's the guy they should put up against Bill de Blasio. How about Ruben
Diaz? You
know,
that's a great idea. I like Eric Adams, and I like both. These are my two favorite borough presidents, Eric Adams in Brooklyn, Ruben Diaz Jr. in the Bronx. It's a question of whether the Puerto Rican or the African-American would have the better chance. You know, you've got to divide and conquer in this crazy town. The white people are leaving de Blasio in droves, you know, from what I see from the surveys, the polls that are being done.
When you Skype in today to, you know, accept this honor up there in the Bronx, tell him, say, we got a message for you. It's time. You need to run for mayor.
along with the honor I am gratefully receiving, albeit by remote control. Also, Angie Martinez, who is terrific.
Oh, Hot 97.
Power 105. Power 105. She's getting the award. And Justice Sally Manzanette Daniels. Sally Manzanette Daniels, Justice of the Appellate Division. And Robert Sancho, Head of Government and Community Affairs at the Bronx Lebanon Hospital, which has really become a terrific facility. So I want to thank everyone in the Bronx. I just want to take Joe's call because he's been holding for a while. Joe in Brooklyn, thank you very much for your patience. What's on your mind? Say it quick.
You were saying that the president's not doing enough. My comment here is that if the Iraqis and the Syrians can't stand up for themselves, why would we send our troops over there to fight and try to reclaim something that they don't want to die for?
Well, that's an interesting and a great question, Joe, and a very thoughtful question. And all I can say is, That's the theory. It's their problem, their civil war. Let's not get involved in it. Look what has happened to the Middle East since... Wait, let me finish, Joe. Let me finish.
Okay.
Look what has happened to the Middle East since we pulled out of Iraq. It's just gone to hell in a handbasket. We can't allow them to have this cancer that is metastasizing and spreading its deadly tentacles here to Paris. Where's it going to go next? What does it take? You saw what took down that airplane. A soda can filled with 50 cents worth of high explosives takes out a plane that kills over 200 people. We've got to do something. You have to cut off the head of the snake, I'm telling you.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.